on to the third case, Elizabeth Ward against Attorney General Holder.
May it please the court, counsel. This is a case in which the immigration judge denied the petitioner's application for cancellation under the Violence Against Women Act, in part because he determined that they did not satisfy the extreme hardship requirement. On appeal to the BIA, a single-member panel of the BIA then decided the appeal rather than referring it to a full three-member panel. The single-member panel then issued a three-page written opinion analyzing the extreme hardship factors as applied to the petitioner's case. However, the single-member panel of the BIA is constrained by the board's governing regulations. 8 CFR 1003.1, E4 and E5 dictate that a single-member panel can only affirm or modify by brief order. And in this case, the three-page written opinion from the single-member panel is not, in fact, a brief order. The majority of the brief orders that we looked at...
How long could it be?
Excuse me, Your Honor?
How long could it be?
Well, I think that's a question that the BIA has to determine on a case-by-case basis. However, there has to be some limit to that. And the majority, looking at the way the BIA interprets that in practice, the majority of the brief orders that we looked at from single-member panels were 1 to 3 paragraphs in length and offered a short explanation as to why they were affirming or why they were correcting the immigration judge's decision.
It is over subjective decision is what's short order and what's a long order, right?
It is generally a subjective, but again, the BIA can't interpret its own regulations in such a way that it renders the wording of the regulations or the intent behind the regulations void or null. And in this case, the regulations were amended in 2002 to slightly enlarge the ability of a single-member panel to affirm summarily. And what that amendment did not do was to essentially grant the single member panel authority that was equal to that of a three member panel in deciding.
The regulations make the single member panel the presumptive path, correct?
That's correct.
Single member unless certain criteria are met.
That's correct.
Okay.
However, in this case, the single member panel, once it elects to not defer to a three member panel, then it's constrained again by E4 and E5. And so implicit in that decision not to refer to a three-member panel is a statement that this case is capable of being resolved by a summary affirmance or by a brief order. And in this case, the fact that the single-member panel was not able to affirm it by a brief order means that it should have been sent to a three-member panel in the first place.
He's too verbose.
That's one way to look at it. Yeah. Another way to look at it is that...
it takes some people about 20 minutes to say yes.
I imagine
you stand here long enough, you'll hear people that take a while to say no.
That is one way to look at it, that he provided too much analysis, but I think the more appropriate way to look at it is that he overstepped his authority and decided an appeal that should have been referred to a three-member panel to decide. And this isn't just a harmless error in this case. In our view, the immigration judge's decision on extreme hardship was erroneous, and the BIA's decision on extreme hardship was also erroneous. That's not before this court to review. However, our petitioners in this case should be offered a chance to have full three-member panel review.
Why didn't the government has raised the issue of failure to exhaust? Obviously, this is not an issue you could raise before the decision is issued.
Sure.
But why not say to the board, wait a minute, you've departed from your own regulations. They're their regulations to interpret, not ours.
Well, I would say, Your Honor, that we did exhaust, that they had the opportunity to get the case right in the first place and follow the regulations.
You can't say we exhausted by never raising the issue, right? Did you ever raise this problem in front of the BIA?
I think that the issue was before the BIA.
Did you raise it?
We did not.
Okay, because you couldn't until the opinion came out, right?
That's true.
Okay, so at that point, you think they've overstepped their bounds on an issue that you couldn't have foreseen, why not at that point say to the board, wait a minute, you blew it. You're not allowed to do this in a single-member decision.
Well, I think that in this case, the fact that the single-member panel had already overstepped its bounds, we're not required to file a motion to reconsider to go back to him and say, we think you messed up. Can you explain to us why you didn't? We think that it makes more sense for the court to say that there are some limits on the authority of a single-member panel under 1003.1E4 and E5.
Well, I understand you're saying you didn't want to do it, but, I mean, it seems to me like the way this is presented, you're asking us to interpret the board's regulations for it, board regulations that might easily be interpreted as simply enabling the board to manage its cases in a certain way rather than creating rights for petitioners. And it's, you know, we with panels of this court, you're expected to, if we do something new and unexpected in a decision, you can bring a motion for a rehearing.
Sure. Well, I mean, to that I would say that the board, the single member, just by virtue of the fact that he overstepped his authority, is going to be less likely to grant us the proper relief in this case. And on top of that, it would further delay the petitioner's.
Less likely is not an excuse for failure to exhaust, is it? That's not the standard.
No, but in this case, Your Honor, there's also the issue of the petitioner's delay of their ultimate relief in this case. The lead petitioner in this case recently lost her job. She's anxious to get this appeal resolved, and I don't think it should be required that the petitioners go back to the BIA to ask them whether they got it right or not before going to this court when there's a case of an error such as this. I think the overarching point is that looking at the regulations together, as I said, once a single-member panel decides not to refer a case to a three-member panel, there's an implicit statement that they're able to decide the case by a brief order. And this court should ensure that that these regulations are followed consistently and that the single-member panels of the BIA don't blur the line between single-panel member review and three-member panel review.
As you know, the Attorney General has argued there's no workable standards in what you're arguing.
Sure.
What would the standards be?
Well, I mean, I think the standard in this case is you can look at the analysis from the single-member panel and the length of the order. That's one factor. It's not the only factor. In this case, the length of the BIA single-member panel's order on extreme hardship was essentially the same length as the immigration judge's analysis of extreme hardship. So,
is it different?
There was some overlap, but the immigration judge didn't cite any board precedents, and he also there was a separate issue of extreme cruelty, which the BIA single-member panel wrote out of the opinion. I see that I'm into my rebuttal time, so I'd like to reserve the rest
of that
time.
That would be one of your standards, wouldn't it? If it's different, if they didn't cover the same issues or did something more or less in three pages as opposed to something.
That could be part of the standard, but I would argue that the mere fact that they ultimately agreed with the result and offered some analysis that was similar should not be dispositive. Thank you.
Okay. Thank you, Mr. Corey. Mr. Hayes for the Attorney General.
Thank you, Your Honor. The board exercised unreviewable discretion in this case when it held that Ms. Ward had not established that a removal would result in extreme hardship to herself or her children. In so doing, the assigned board member properly followed the streamlining regulations in choosing to adjudicate a claim of prospective hardship in a single-member opinion affirming the immigration judge. Ms. Ward's claim that this board member legally erred by being too thorough in his written assessment of her claim is not tenable as a ground of legal error, and the court should dismiss the petition for review. First, Ward did not exhaust her administrative remedies. By statute, applicants must exhaust all administrative remedies available to them as of right. This court has said in Padilla versus Gonzalez that the touchstone for the as-of-right language is whether the agency has both the authority and the ability to provide meaningful relief to the applicant. A procedural default, which is what's being alleged in this case, is a quintessential type of claim that the board may remedy on its own by way of a motion to reconsider. that is provided for the alien in the statute, and that is a type of motion that you should bring before the agency if you believe there was some sort of procedural error in the way it wrote its decision. Ms. Ward's failure to pursue that remedy means her claim of legal error is waived on judicial appeal, and since a waived claim cannot form a colorable basis for legal error, the court should dismiss a petition for review. But even
let me ask you, Mr. Hayes, on this exhaustion issue. If the petitioner just disagrees, thinks that the IJ and the BIA applied the wrong legal standard to the request for relief, you wouldn't say a motion to reconsider is required to exhaust there, would you?
I would say yes, it is, Your Honor. The Tenth Circuit has held that it is. In that case,
you have to reconsider? You have to bring
a claim of I assume you're talking about de novo versus clearly erroneous, whether it's reviewing the immigration judge's decision correctly, the scope of review.
I'm not sure my question is that precise.
But the Tenth Circuit.
I'm just trying to understand how broadly I understand the idea that a procedural error that or issue that could not have been raised before the opinion issued might need to be brought through a motion to reconsider. I want to understand how broad a rule you're arguing for.
Oh, okay, Your Honor. If, for example, if the alien brought an administrative appeal before the board and argued in her brief that the immigration judge made a correct factual finding, the board should defer to that factual finding under the clearly erroneous standard, they do not need to bring a motion to reconsider. If the applicant believes on judicial appeal that the board incorrectly applied a de novo standard. But if there is no mention of the standard at all, and that was not an issue or raised in the briefs before the board, then you would have to bring a motion to reconsider. And that's something the Tenth Circuit has said you have to do when you argue, and also when you argue streamlining errors, too.
Which case was are you referring to in the Tenth Circuit?
Oh, it's pronounced, it's spelled T-S-E-G-A-Y. Tsegi versus Gonzalez, Your Honor. I believe it's in our brief.
Okay, thank you.
And even if the claim of legal error was exhausted, it wouldn't be colorable on this record either. There is no constitutional or statutory right to three-member panel review. The right, if it exists at all, it lies with the regulation. But as this Court has said in Martinez-Camarago versus INS, not every violation of an agency regulation leads to the invalidation of subsequent agency action. And the regulation in question here was not primarily adopted to confer any sort of procedural benefit on the alien. It was adopted to provide the Board with a standard to manage its caseload. The origins of this regulation occurred in 1999 when the Board had a 60,000-plus backlog in administrative appeals. The Attorney General stepped in and said, hey, 2 to 3 year delays is not efficient. We need to move this along. So these streamlining regulations were put in place to help the agency. They weren't put in place to help the alien. And as the Supreme Court stated in American Farm Lines, the allegation of a violation of a procedural rule that is primarily adopted to guide the agency in the exercise of its discretion is not reviewable unless the petitioner also attaches a showing of substantial prejudice to that claim of legal error. And Ms. Ward has not done that here. The agency provided her with a reasoned decision on the extreme hardship issue. Both the immigration judge and the single board member agreed, 90% of it is on point, that this case does not show extreme hardship. And the wholly speculative notion that if you threw two additional board members into the mix, that the case might go the other way does not show substantial prejudice. In conclusion, the board correctly applied the streamlining regulations to Ms. Ward's appeal and did not err in exercising its discretion in denying her application for relief. Because Ward has not presented a colorable ground of legal error for this court to review, the court should dismiss the petition. Thank you, Your Honors.
Mr. Hayes, rebuttal, Mr. Corey.
Thank you, Your Honors. Just a couple of brief points on rebuttal. The government cites states that this is unreviewable because the ultimate issue is the extreme hardship, and as we cited in our reply brief, we're not seeking review of that extreme hardship determination, which would be potentially subject to the jurisdiction stripping statute under subsection B1 of that statute. However, as the Kukana case from the Supreme Court made clear, we're proceeding under B2, which is interpretation of the BIA's regulations and not subject to that jurisdiction-stripping statute. And this court cited that distinction in Juarez, which we cite in our brief. In addition, the question of prejudice is an interesting one in this case, and the idea that the wholly speculative notion that if you throw two more judges in the mix wouldn't change anything. This is the BIA reviews these determinations, the determination on extreme hardship, de novo. And so in this case, if you have three member panel as opposed to a one member panel, they could easily reach a different result. And in our case, I believe that they would have reached a different result. And the Quinteros case from the Fourth Circuit 2009 opinion points out that the agency itself recognizes that there's a procedural benefit that comes from three-member panel review versus single-member panel review, and there's less likelihood that the three-member panel is going to get the decision wrong or make factual errors and things like that. So it is important, and I don't want to minimize that distinction. And do I have anything else? Yeah. The fact that the regulations are streamlining regulations primarily for the benefit of the agency does not mean that they can interpret them in such a way that they read the brief order requirement out of the regulations. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Corey. The case is taken under advisement.